It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to see my partner, my cohort, Captain Mike Ward.
Sean, it is awesome to be here, especially on a great news day today.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Obviously, with bow season having opened and looking at hunting seasons all straight ahead of us, great inshore fishing to talk about. But blue water fishing starts us off with the big news story from Thursday morning when I first started getting a text into my phone about this giant blue marlin coming into the docks here in Alabama.
All over the social media. It is an awesome fish.
Maybe by now you've seen the pictures, and if not, we'll post them up as well through our social media platforms. But to talk more about it, you know him from the world of blue water fishing, obviously the Blue Marlin Grand Championship, and all-around bon vivant, and my buddy Jim Cox joining us now. Hey, Jimmy.
Wait, you're not having me on to talk bow hunting?
No, we will. Yeah, later on the show, we're going to
talk about wine.
He can talk wine. He just can't
talk about one of those. I can talk about one of the two of those things that he likes.
It's just not bow hunting. Yeah, this is something I'm thinking about. This, you and I and Mike have talked about the when and if of this story for a long time. Can we back up and kind of tell folks, what the story is on? This is a grander. This is over 1,000-pound blue marlin. But even though everybody fishes the same pond of the Gulf of Mexico, records are set over 1,000 pounds in other states, but had never been set for here in Alabama, even though we fish the same waters, right?
Yeah, it's not, it's just so different for anything out in the Gulf. It's just so different than like an inshore species where you're just, you're fishing on the Alabama River, you're mm-hmm. fishing at, Miller's Ferry, whatever like that. It's where you depart from and where you return to, and you just can't make landfall anywhere else. So you couldn't leave and then stop in Venice and spend the night, or the old days, Port Eads, because then you'd be technically making landfall in Louisiana. So, but I think all of the, especially the private charter or the private captains down here that fish all of these tournaments, and they fish them all over the Gulf Coast. I mean, this is the fish that everybody has wanted.
Yeah.
Everybody has wanted to be the one to catch a grander. And of course, selfishly, we always wanted it to happen during the Blue Marlin Grand Championship, but Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, all those fish over 1,000 pounds, and we were the one, just lagging behind, and that got just totally changed with that fish that came in on Thursday morning.
So let's talk about this before we'll get back into the details, because I do have a question. Like, we'll get to it. Like, if you had to fuel back up or something like that, but we'll get to it. Let's talk about this fish. We talk about a grander. The last number I had, you may have because you're kind of really in this world, 1,145.6 pounds. Is that right?
Yes, that was the official scale, the certified scale that they weighed it on Thursday morning. So yeah, that's the number.
139 inches.
Absolute
long.
Monster.
84 inch girth. I mean. Monstrous for sure. You look at these pictures. I mean, and I know people who've seen it, saw the fish in person, said the pictures don't do it justice. But dang, the picture weighs 7 pounds. This fish is so big. I mean, it's unreal.
It's so hard. There's a few pictures online with it hanging from the scale, and because there's not a lot around it, so it's hard to get context. It's hard to see how big it is.
Yeah.
But when you look at the one that was in the boat when they were just bringing it in the tuna door, I mean, that was the one I saw on Wednesday night when I got the text, and it was just like, ooh, yeah, this is the game changer for sure. So, it's the girth on that, the tail, when you see just how big the tail is, and everybody talks about the stump.
What is the stump?
Area right in front of the tail, how big that is. It's just, it's a dinosaur. I mean, that's kind of what it's like.
Yeah. So they said 20 inch stump. So that stump measurement, that's right before the flare of the tail then.
Yeah. Right.
And that's 20 inches. So at the narrow part before it gets back up, it's 20 inches. My God.
Right. And, you know, so there's formulas, you know, there's formulas online or formulas you can kind of calculate when you have the length and the girth and those things. And sometimes they're spot on. Sometimes they're, you know, way off. But, I mean, some of them were coming in like, you know, 12-25, somewhere in there. So it wasn't very, very far off when you think about a percentage from, you know, 11-45 to, say, 12-25. And that's just not a big percentage of being being off. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a truly amazing, amazing fish. And like, you know, so a lot of times a fish that big, especially when you're using heavy tackle, when the fish feels that much drag being put on them, they have a tendency to want to sound. They want to go deep. And a lot of times the big fish like that will die when it goes deep. And then you're just trying to winch that thing up, you know, trying to get the boat to help you winch it up slowly, slowly, slowly. Whereas if you're fishing, say, light tackle, and the fish don't feel as much drag, they tend to stay up on the surface more. And this one, they said, died in the fight, and they still got it in about 2 hours, which is just totally shocking to me. Because, I mean, when a really big blue marlin dies on the line after it's gone deep like that, I mean, those are the stories you hear 6, 7, 8 hours, you know, just in the chair and just trying to slowly just winch it up one crank at a time. So I'm glad they didn't have to go through that.
I'm really shocked that they got it in 2 hours. I mean, you know, I hear people talk about the fish dying deep like that and they plane the fish up. And I don't know if they did this or did that or not, but I've heard them using the boat and just planing the fish up and get the fish up closer and then really wind down on it and then plane it back up some more. So maybe that, if you talk to them, is that what could have happened?
I haven't, and I'm sure they're using, you know, probably 80s in their chair. But I mean, there's only so much heat you can put on them to try to plane them up at that point. And probably helped them a little bit that it was calm. You know, it was really calm.
Yeah,
that probably helped them a bit. But regardless, just unbelievable fish. I'm so happy for them, and I know everybody else is. All the other people in the fishing, kind of big game fishing industry is super happy for them and excited as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the you know, we talk about the fish now, but let's talk about who caught it, right? So the boat and the angler.
Yeah, that's straight. And the angler was Scooter Anderson. Chris Moad is the captain, 55-foot Viking, and you know, just a quote unquote fun fishing trip. You know, no tournament, no season long tournament, no anything like that. I mean, so they were just out. They were out just fishing for what, you know, for what most of us fish for, just to go on a fun fishing trip, and got the fish of a lifetime. You know, and you know, Mark Kennedy's record stayed for, I think it was 23 years, 25 years, something like that before we broke
776 pounds, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, and then we broke it twice in 1 year back in 2014 or 2015, you know, broke it twice in 90 minutes at the Marlin Grand Championship.
That's
and then,
right.
Then they broke it back in 2020 at
that was at 851. I remember when that fish came in, you're like, Sean, we got the monster coming in at 851. You know?
Yeah, an 851 is a really big fish. But like Louisiana, their state record is 1,018 pounds, and they caught it in 1977. And you just think about all the people that have gone blue marlin right off the mouth of the river, you know, and how many trips that's been. And they had one got close like 970 something a few years ago. But Florida was 2001 in Panama City at 1,049 pounds, and Mississippi the next year, and they're turning over there at 1,054. And like you said, Sean, you know, everybody's fishing around the same rigs. I mean, we're all going to the same place to fish, no matter where we leave from. It's not, you know, there's no boundary lines drawn around the state waters out there. So everybody's fishing the same place, and it's just amazing it's taken this long for Alabama to get theirs.
Yeah. So my nerdy question there that I was leading to earlier. So the boat has to leave from Alabama to be right. It has to leave Alabama and come back into Alabama and not be in another state. So what in the situation if I was running low on fuel I couldn't have, back when Port Eads was open or something like that, or Venice, could I pull in and get fuel, or was that, would that DQ?
That would DQ the fish because
I'd pay a barge to come out and
in another state at that point.
I'd have to pay a barge or somebody else to bring me a fuel bladder out, say I can't go touch land.
That's right.
Exactly. You know, like you don't have a supply boat on the speed dial just for those instances.
Not my world. That's not a world I live in, but I've heard of people who do live in that world. Anywhere you say we all kind of fish the same area, any scuttlebutt about where they were, or were they dragging around rigs? Were they on a rib?
Fishing a lot, I think, around Blind Faith, which is a real popular rig that everybody's fished around for a bunch of years. And Mike, you'll appreciate this. I've just been telling everybody they caught it on a blue and white islander with a ballyhoo behind a bird at the 131 hole. That's what I'm telling everybody. You know, just 30 miles out of Orange Beach on a little dink ballyhoo and islander on their bird like a center console knucklehead to pull all day.
Yeah.
That's good. So, hey, do you have a second? Can you hold on during the break and come back with us? I have a few more questions. So is our buddy Jim Cox. Of course, you know him with the Blue Marlin Grand Championship, and we think about Big Blue Marlin. Having Jim and Mike Ward on with me at the same time is a real treat, because something really big happened here as a grander has come in, and not only a grander, but not just the Alabama record. Are we looking at a Gulf record? We'll talk about that when we come back with Jim Cox right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our buddy Jim Cox. Always good to get him on the show, and what a time to get him on the show right now, talking about the grander, and one hell of a blue marlin here.
Monster.
Truly, truly monster fish. And Jim, here, a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, the fish now, at 1,145 pounds, give or take 0.6, once again, if y'all have not seen the pictures, just go open up social media. It's all over the place. It'll be on our Facebook page as well. How old is a fish like that? How do any idea?
Yeah, and so you know what they. So it's kind of like they do with snapper or other fish or a tree. You know, the hopefully somebody will get the ear bone out of there and they'll count the rings in there. And there's been some. I don't want to say debate, but maybe some new science has come along and saying maybe these fish grow faster than we originally thought. But, you know, I would still guess that fish is 20, 25, 30, 40, 50 years old. I mean, it's just a long time. And they really, once they get to kind of that size, they don't keep growing a lot more like they do in their younger years. But, I think it's an old fish for sure. It's eaten a lot of other small tunas in its life and never had an issue. But I will say the one thing I think that is also kind of great on a macro level about this. So for the last 10 years, say, we've really seen the number of blue marlin catches in the Gulf of Mexico really increase. And you can attribute that to a lot of things, to the boats, to the anglers, technology, all these things. But it has, like, the Gulf of Mexico has transformed to become, I mean, it's one of the best blue marlin fishing places in the world now.
Yeah,
that's talked about like anywhere else that you go. I mean, you know, when you see teams that now in the tournament or fun fishing, they go out for a 2-day trip and they're coming back, they've caught 12 or 14 or 15 blue marlin.
Insane.
On one trip. And you see the size that these are, and this will really put a big spotlight on how great the fishing is here, because it's a grander, and there's just not many of those ever caught anywhere in the world. I mean, it's the biggest blue marlin ever caught for an Atlantic blue marlin was 1,400 pounds.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that, and I'm glad you brought that up because that was one of my questions. Because we've talked about this for a long time, as you've been talking about blue water fishing and our area, how people are traveling from all over. It comes specifically; they come to the wharf for the Blue Marlin Grand Championship, but they come for other tournaments here. Blue water fishing used to not be a. It used to be like a just a very small number of people did it. It wasn't our thing around here, and now we have an international reputation and a marlin that's what 300 something pounds away from the. All-time world record.
Yeah, it's just it really is. So when especially people who kind of know who watch what they do in Hawaii or watch what they do in other parts of the world where the blue marlin fishing is really really good, and a lot of those places you're able to go out and put up big numbers, which is everybody what you want. You want to be able to go out and catch five, six, seven, eight blue marlin on a trip. Well, you keep seeing that on more regularity here, and now when you couple it with one of the biggest fishes, it's going to be probably in the top 10 in the U.S. I mean, just think about just not that many places that have, North Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota. They don't got a lot of blue marlin on the books there, so there's not that many that have been caught this size in this country. So it's really going to, I think it's, people will take notice even more now that we've got a grander that has come in here to Alabama.
Well, I think what has changed out in the Gulf more than anything, because I've been fishing out there before there was ever an oil rig out in that deep water. And the oil rigs is what I believe is contributing to all the fish being caught out there. Used to, when we'd go bill fishing, we just went out in the wild blue yonder. We just trolled and trolled and trolled. We might not see a grass line, might not see any bait anywhere. We just go forever and troll a lure behind the boat and may not see or catch or anything all day long. I've done it 3 days in a row. Now you go to the oil rigs. The oil rigs are loaded with bait, every kind of little bitty bait to a great big bait, tuna everywhere. And that brings in the marlin. I mean, that's what's changed. And it's gone from zero oil rigs that I knew of out in the Gulf, deep water. And I say deep water, anything over 600 fathom, to now, how many would you think's out in the Gulf right now? From drill ships to oil rigs in that real deep water.
Hundreds.
Yes.
I mean, hundreds. Hundreds of them. And so, from Texas to our... to Alabama and then back to the east. But I also think that's when they talk about thinking maybe these fish grow a little faster than we did in the past, I think it may just be more of a function of they're able to eat more fish in the Gulf because they're not having to be constantly traveling large,
yes.
Great amounts of covering a lot of water to find schools of bait. They stay around the oil rigs where the bait is always there. And so maybe they're able to eat better throughout their life, which means they grow faster as they age. Just a thought.
It's probably a good thought. So, I mean, it's like me not having – I don't have to walk a mile and have to go get the hamburger. I just walk to the refrigerator and heat it up in the microwave. It helps right. me. I'm trying not to be a grander, but, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that to me is
– And I would love, you just don't know, is just, where has this fish been wintering in the past? Where has
right.
it been summering? I mean, has it been down, in the Caribbean? Has it been up the East Coast and came down around the Straits of Florida and made it back into the Gulf? They are world travelers and was it a steering current that brought that fish here this year, or has that fish been, did it just hear about, hey, you need to go check out those oil rigs off the Alabama coast and decide to, come hang out here? That would be really fascinating. No, but we'll never know. But they are just nomads. I mean, they will travel. I mean, this fish could have been, off Long Island in New York or down in the Bahamas or anywhere in between in the past 5, 10 years, a year, 6 months.
That's right. And the other thing that has changed is now they're using live bait. And I just firmly believe that you catch bigger fish on live bait than you do on lures. You put a live 15-pound, 20-pound tuna in front of a big marlin, he's more subject to eat that than he is a plastic bait going overhead. Now that's
and you couple that too with now in the past 5 years how prevalent sonar fishing has become. So not just like the guys like Sean and Jim and Mike have on their boat, but a sonar that deploys out the bottom of the boat, and now you can be around an oil rig and you can spot a fish that's a half a mile away, and you can now move your bait in front of it, and you can stay in front of that fish for an hour, two hours. Right. I mean, that's a whole
nother game changer. Totally.
Yeah,
you can say that fish is 200 pounds. I don't want to have food with that one. Let's go. Yeah, look at that one. That one looks like around 1,000 to 1,500 pounds. Let's go get him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really changed things. And there's an art form to that about, reading a sonar and those things. So it's, that coupled with the live bait fishing and just the fact, Mike, we've talked about it, boats can just fish places that they weren't able to fish 20 years ago. I mean, it's just...
You're 100% right there, too. Technology,
boats. To go 150, 200, 250 miles out of Orange Beach to go marlin fishing is a common occurrence, and that was never, never thought of in the past.
Back in the day, there was no boat that had that kind of fuel capacity. Everything was go out 50, 60 miles. Nobody thought somebody's going
to
go out 200 miles.
That far out in the Gulf to go fishing? You're crazy to do that.
That's right. Yeah, so all that. There's a lot of things that have changed to make it to where it is possible to go out and catch a 1,000-pounder now.
The other thing I just want to throw into this mix, too, that I've been thinking about the whole time, is you think that fish was caught and released before? Somewhere in its life, because of how strong the ethic is for catch and release for billfish.
Yeah.
Was that fish caught in the past? And did that fish exist because somebody let it go when it was 500 or something,
No doubt. I mean, that's just never, never know. That'd be a great thing to, you wish you knew, but it certainly could have been, but if it was caught in the last 10 years, I would just say wasn't going to be released for any reason because it would have been a state record fish 10 years ago.
Gotcha. So it's been in that category weight wise for a long time. And you talk about, you mentioned world class blue water fishing here. So something like this. So let's just talk about the business of this for a little bit. A news story like this has got to be sent out on letterhead from the Blue Marlin Grand Championship, right, to prospective angler teams for this coming year.
No doubt about it, and that's where that's where I think because it's a different type of fishing that it's not something that a regular family that's coming down here from Indiana in the summer and like, hey, let's go blue marlin fishing. It's a bit different than a regular charter fishing. But what we are seeing is now we're seeing people like at the wharf who are bringing their boats up here and staying for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months to fish here in the summer, as opposed to being in the Bahamas or somewhere else. It's giving big boats that travel a real incentive to come here and stay. And when you think about you think about a 70-foot or an 80-foot Viking that comes and rents a slip at the marina, has a crew of probably three or four on it. You got the owner flying in when they want to go fishing. You think about the economic impact, those type changes make to our communities down there. And just, one boat is huge. But now we're having, dozens of boats that are coming here and spending parts of their year to fish out of here as opposed to going somewhere else.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And also want to talk about for the rest of us who now maybe are more fired up than we were before or whatever, what's the how's blue water fishing been here outside the grander? How's blue water fishing been? Any reports?
Yeah, I mean, it's been good. My friends on Skin Deep were out last Monday and Tuesday, and they caught five. They left on Monday midday and came back Tuesday at dark, and they caught five blue marlin, a couple tunas as well. So it's been good. I think the biggest challenge we have right now is just so many people that also like to fish are now they're up at the hunting camp, or they've been getting their hunting camp ready, because a lot of folks transition to, you know, this time of year to hunting season. So you don't see nearly as many folks going out there to fish. But it's been a I'd say a typical great summer. We had probably more calm weather this year than we've had in any year I can remember. So we had more good chances to go, but I think it's been just right. And that's the other thing too. Like, fishing's really good now. It'll be really good in November. It'll be really good in December out there, around the rigs. And then maybe it slows a bit in January when it gets really cold, but then, I've caught them out there in February, March, because like Mike says, the fish, we're all creatures of, hey, what can we do the easiest to survive? And as long as the bait's there, these fish are going to stay around these areas year long now, because there's just really no reason to leave unless the water temperature were to get really, really cold. So they're out there year round.
What a story. Yep. What a story. Jim, I appreciate you being on with us this morning, talking about it, and hopefully we have more of these stories coming in soon, although it might be a while to get another grander in the mix.
Another 100 years. You might be here, Sean.
Might be, but tune in next week for my bow hunting tips and tricks from Jim Cox in 2023 Alabama bow season.
That one's going to go straight to podcast. Jim, as always, man, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, coming right back. You and I might talk a little bow hunting now that Jim, is going to give us tips next week. We'll do our part of it when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Big thank you to Jim Cox. Talking about, once again, if you didn't catch the superlatives there, the list, Blue Marlin coming in, obviously taking Alabama's record, Gulf record as well. 1,145.6 pounds caught by Scooter Anderson on the best trait out of Orange Beach. Congratulations.
Unbelievable how big a fish that is. That is just amazing. Just like Jim said, Mark Kendi had that record for 20-something years.
Right.
Well, before Mark caught the record 776 pounds, I think like...
Wasn't it 600?
It might have been 500-something pounds, whatever it was. I mean, Mark beat it pretty bad. And then now, it had been broke a couple times since Mark. Caught that one, but not anything close to 1,000 pounds. But
no, I got a feel this one's gonna stand
for a very long time.
Speaking of fishing,
maybe forever.
Yeah, maybe a heck of a place.
Yeah,
a mark there for Alabama too. As we talk about fishing too, if you didn't hear this last week, it opened back up and it closed back down. So snapper season closed.
That's right.
So
season closed Tuesday.
Okay, so Jim said the weather's been good. Generally, and he's talking about the whole summer.
Yeah, he's not talking about the last three weeks.
But that's what I was trying to figure out. So I was, I've been, went out to Utah for a week, and then I was, been working at the farm and doing all that. So, and the weather looked bad. I figured, hey, we'll have time to catch it. We won't go through this 15,000 very fast. We did.
Really
quota
did.
Went very fast.
I thought the same thing, Sean. I said, well...
I figured we'd be fishing on into November. I'd find a slick day in November or later this month, but
that's what I was hoping. I was going to get to go one more time, but it's over with before I got a chance to go back.
So that's more dialing into beeliners and scamp and all that good stuff.
That's right. I'm going fishing one more time for hunting season before I start hunting.
Good.
I'm going at least one more time.
Good. So. I want to do the same for sure. It's always when you can plan your trips. Or when I have to be at work. Like this last week, I saw a lot of great days, 0.7.
Wednesday and Thursday was just superb fishing days, period.
And you know how that happens. When I have to work and there's no way I can be gone, that's when it's good.
Couldn't cool in the morning, 75 degrees high for the day.
Yep.
Oh,
no chance I get to go when it's like that.
No wind.
Yeah.
It don't get any better than that, buddy.
I'm going to try to make some of these trips like you this fall and maybe into the winter. Let's talk about bow hunting. And with it open, you got any reports? Anybody get anything good?
Had a friend shot a big one, and they didn't recover it. So hopefully, they were hoping buzzards, they'd find it over buzzards this past week, but I haven't heard any reports on it. So that, you know, I know other people have killed some deer since it opened up last Saturday, but I only heard of one that was shot but wasn't recovered. But it's supposed to be a really big one.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Another question here, too, is have you heard, like, for me, this is, and we talk about this because I monitor so many cameras, just that little bit of cool we've had, I mean, it's 10-degree difference, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it is, I can show you, because I watch this every day on all these cameras, the movement, it's night and day.
Sure,
and literally night and day, and from night to day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really steps up.
Well, they know this cold air, that means winter's coming. They're going to have to feed up for the winter.
Yeah. It's just interesting to watch how much it steps up, you know?
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, I'm not talking about, like, August heat's one thing, but we had some cooler, drier periods, and they moved a little bit better. But when those cool mornings we got, you know, at the farm in the upper 40s, I guess, 49 or so, man, it was just, I was like, oh, it's here. It's here. Also, I guess we got to remind you, too, on bow season depends on what zone you're in, remember, but if you are a zone, actually, it may be for the whole state, but we always used to check it out for our state. For our region, yeah. For our region. We're zone B. In other words, is it this weekend or is it?
For the first.
No, it's the 25th. I'm sorry. For zone B, it's the 25th. So starting on the 25th, you can start shooting does.
Yes.
So right now it's buck only, last weekend buck only now.
From the 15th of October to the 25th of October, you can only shoot bucks.
Right. And then after that, for zone B, then it's either sex. And that's, I mean, that makes sense. The biology that said we're going to move the closing date into February because of the peak of the rut. If that is true, which it was, then therefore there's so many, and I can tell you, I watch a lot of fawns on the farm. They're not ready to have mama shot. You know, leave them stranded and they die.
Yeah.
There's still biddies out there.
And the 25th probably is a little early.
A little early, too. I agree. Yeah. You know, we've talked about that with Chuck Sykes of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. And we said the same thing. Personally, for me, now you can look and see deer come out, but sometimes you think that doe's by herself and the fawn is back there. We don't start shooting them until, like, getting pretty close to gun season.
Yeah, I agree on that. And, you know, you have to look at each case.
Right, yeah. If the doe walks out there and the fawn is on up looking like a dang yearling or something, different story.
Different story. They survive on their own.
But sometimes you see a doe and you go, well, she probably doesn't have a fawn with her. Probably worth waiting just a little bit because one of those little fuzzballs comes out behind her and then you're like,
I shot one time I shot one. A doe came out and I shot it just like what you're talking about. Didn't know that it was two yearlings was with it. And that's the most miserable thing I ever seen in my life. I'll never do that again. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the first part of gun season.
Yeah.
And the two little yearlings, and they were by, you know. I mean, it'd make you sick.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I didn't know. Doe came out, and we were shooting does, and I shot it, and then the yearlings come out.
And you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it was just crossing the road, so it wasn't like I could see all around.
Right, not out like in the middle of a patch or something.
That's
like
that. You know, so it'll make you sick when that happens.
Yep. So heads up on that. You know,
be careful.
Yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of patches too, what a story. So I've been asked, I don't know, 2,600 times in the last 2 weeks, Am I planted? I said, no, we're prepped and ready, but we had not put any seed in the ground.
I'm the same way.
Okay. So we're prepped and ready, but no seed in the ground. And, you know, a couple things. I get more questions, I guess, about cameras and throw and mow are the things I get most emails about here. And on the throw and mow, people have said, hey, Sean, we did throw and mow. Like, we've been studying what you're talking about, but it's not growing. Okay. Throw and mow is a great technique to rebuild soil. Throw and mow is a way to take junk soil like I deal with and try to build back topsoil.
Right.
Okay. It's also less wear and tear. It's less diesel, all these things. But it still has to rain.
You got to have moisture. Yes.
This guy was like, man, we did the throw a mow. We
that's
mowed
why
it.
You haven't yeah. put seed yep. out, and that's why I haven't put seed
we
out.
We had that little rain, but this person said,
I wanted it to get moisture in the ground yep. to start with.
Correct.
Before I put the seed out. So now there's a little moisture in the ground.
But it's like this, is this a trap? You know,
yeah,
sometimes
I know.
There's these traps where you think, okay, we're going to get a rain. And so you go plant on that rain, and then that's it for 14 days or
yes.
something like that. So
and
this time
happen.
Of year. Yeah, this time of year it can get stay real dry.
Yeah, but the good thing is we're having cool weather, so the moisture evaporation is not near as high as it is.
And you get some condensation on these mornings.
That's right.
Know?
That's
and
right.
That's really,
and
that's
the way
the,
we do it with the throw and mow is that you're putting grass over the top of seed, and that's creating a moisture barrier down there, which
yep.
is helping.
That dew drips down those that dead thatch layer
right.
that you have on top, and it drops in there, and it holds it, you know, protects it from the sun from evaporating.
That's right.
But it still has to rain.
It does have to rain.
So I just want to make sure, because somebody said, well, I'd throw a mow, and I did the thing, and I'm like, but it didn't rain. They're like, well, no, it didn't rain. I'm like, well, okay. So whether you're doing traditional or you're doing throw-a-mo, we got to have that rain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be heads up on that.
Yeah.
And so I hadn't planted. You hadn't planted.
And, yeah. And, hey, look, it may be close to gun season, or it may be even after gun season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I'm going to wait.
With the money I spend in fertilizer, you spend in fertilizer and seed.
And seed, yep.
Then I'm going to try to make sure I got the best chance of getting it to go. So if that means we don't have green patches for bow season, we don't right
yeah.
now. Go hunt other places.
Yeah. Now, there was a lot of people that planted right before this big rain a week ago,
mm-hmm.
and they lucked out, got a good rain. But there's not much rain in the forecast now. It may come up, and they may be sorry they planted.
Yeah. So that's a real
Don't
thing.
Know.
Yeah.
You're gambling.
It is a gamble, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. But, yeah, even if it's throw and mow, it still has to rain.
That's right.
Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this show. And yeah, so a mix of 1,000-pound blue marlin and bow hunting talk. You know, I've been on a tractor. I've not even taken a real walk lately because I've been on a tractor to look at, and I don't have a ton of hardwoods on our place. We're mostly longleaf pines, but I hadn't seen what the acorn crop looks like this year. Have you been studying?
I haven't seen it. You know, I do have couple of feeders that are around big oak trees,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't seen any acorns on the ground.
I'm trying to think, you know what I did? I checked a feeder that's not even operable, but I was taking inventory what needs done, you know, what needs batteries, this and that, and one of them is on a kind of a hill that's full of live oaks, sand
right.
live oaks, which is not the preferred acorn, but where I am, it's what they got. And now I think about it, my son and I rode through there Sunday. Yeah, there wasn't a new one on the ground at all.
Yeah.
So it's
maybe they're getting eaten up. Who
yeah,
knows?
Maybe.
Or they're just not dropping. I haven't seen. I don't know. It may be a bumper crop this year, but it may not. I don't know. But get back to talking about throw and mow again,
mm-hmm.
talking about it don't come up unless it rains
yes.
on it. But it's the same thing if you disc the seed in the ground.
Correct.
It may come up because you got a little bit of moisture down in there. It may
mm-hmm.
come up about an inch or two.
But that's but even more dangerous.
It is. And if you don't get any more rain, like right now, we had a big rain a week ago or
mm-hmm.
a week and a half ago. And, man, a lot of people planted right before that rain. They saw it coming. And there hadn't been any rain since. And in the forecast, it's another week or
yeah.
10 days or so, it looks like, before it might get a little bit of rain.
Yep.
So, you know, you're taking a gamble either way you go. I remember one year that it was so dry.
How dry was it?
It was dry. No, no, it wasn't dry. It was so wet. That's what it was. It was so wet we couldn't get in our fields with equipment to plant. It was opening weekend of deer season, gun season.
We talked about that.
Before,
yeah.
I thought it was dry, but it was wet. That's what it was. And we couldn't get in there to plant, but we did it opening weekend of gun season.
I know so, on the regular, I mean, for me, it's like I'm not late. For me, it's, you know, if I get planted by Halloween right there after Halloween, then That's kind of normal.
It's good.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's good, yeah.
But there are other places to hunt other than Greenfield.
That's right. And look, it doesn't take but about 2 weeks. And if you got good marsh in the ground and all, and the seed starts coming up, the green starts coming up, and you'll have plenty of deer in there in 2 weeks.
All right. I want to, before we wrap up, to shift gears, because what all my friends are doing, including my friend Mike Ward, and that I'm not doing because I'm not doing anything, is flounder fishing. I sat with Richard Rutland. Big thank you to Alabama Wildlife Federation had me back out.
Yeah, we went
as a
to that
judge, yeah, for the
Monday night
wild game cook-off. Yep. And I was in there with Richard Rutland, Captain Richard Rutland, and to hear him go on and on, if Richard, you're listening, to go on and on about the flounder he's catching, and then all my other buddies in the flounder they're catching, then Mike walks in to do the show today, and the flounder he's catching, good for y'all. I'll say good for y'all. Maybe I'm jealous, but good for y'all.
Well, the problem with it is we did catch a bunch. We went Wednesday. Beautiful day. It's, you know, Wednesday and Thursday this past week. It don't get any better days than that to go fishing. But we caught a bunch. We caught 30. Okay?
Man.
30 flounders. But we only could keep three of them. Now, the three we kept were, you know,
I've seen
two and a half to 4 pound, maybe even bigger. I hadn't weighed.
A 4 pound flounder is a fine flounder.
I mean, Kent Airbender, my buddy, caught it. And when he hooked it, he said, "Dead gum, I'm hung again." You know, and he was jerking on it, you know, like, come off. And all of a sudden it moved, and it was
that
4 pound, whatever it was. I mean, it might have been 5 pound. I don't, it was a good flounder. But anyway, there's just a lot of 11 and 12 and 13-inch flounders.
That's
out
a great
there.
Thing, too, though.
I just wonder. I mean, is that all of those fish that they released, you know, out of the hatchery?
And the fact that, you know, with November comes a closure.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did that for the netting and everything, because that's when they all go, you know, back out the passes and go to spawn. How many fish survived that wouldn't normally survive?
Yes. I mean, you catch those.
So, they're, you know, and they're making more babies and more babies.
But you catch those 11, 12, 13-inch fish in the nets.
Mm-hmm.
They don't survive that.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so they don't survive. So, I mean, those are all dead no matter what. You have to throw them back. Can't keep them.
Right. But, so when they shut that dead. Down in November, now that's been 2 years.
Yes, I think it's
been
has.
2 years. That, you know, the harvesting in November, no net setting there. That's good.
That's right. I mean, recreational or commercial. Yeah. You can't catch a flounder and keep it in November.
In November.
That's
so,
right.
And so there's little tweaks like this that are done. You know, and we'll talk about this in the future with Director Bannon. You know,
right.
And, that they do these things. And, you know, change is hard. I was one when they did the speckled trout change. I was like, you know, you change the size. I don't want to kill big fish. You can put a top, but give people 10 fish, you know, all these things. But now I've watched the benefit of this, too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it takes. And on the flounder thing, I think the more of these stories where, yes, there's a change to the limits, it gets in the crawl of some people. Although I think it was easier with flounder because it was so bad.
It was bad. I mean, you could go all day and not catch a flounder, or you could catch one or maybe two.
And it was so bad that it was easier when they put those regulations in effect versus trout that I, you know, I thought was.
Didn't really affect you because you wasn't catching them anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
But they make these changes, and then when you see stories like you're talking about, catching 30.
Yes.
That makes it easier to go, all right, I'm down with this.
That's right.
Let the science do its thing.
Yeah. And hopefully these, you know, 11, 12, 13-inch fish, got to be 14-inch to keep them. And hopefully they will grow up and be what we're going to catch next year and years down the road.
So that is good news.
Yeah.
So just asking, south end of the bay, middle part of the bay, north end of the bay?
Oh, Dolphin Island.
Okay.
We're fishing Dolphin Island. And I tell you what we're using for bait. We're using cut bait.
No, not bull minnows, not shrimp, cut bait.
No, cut bait. Using like a croaker and fillet a croaker.
Like butterflied or take the fillets off and use those.
And cut it down the middle, and you got two pieces there to use for a cut bait.
See, now we got the heads up on the magic bait.
I mean, it's not a secret. That's, a lot of people do that. A lot of people use live bait.
Mm-hmm.
Some use the, what is it, fish bites.
Fish bites, fish strips, yeah.
The strips are, they've got grubs now, and a lot of people are using those. But, you know, all this stuff works on flounder. You know, they're aggressive fish. They'll
yes, they are.
What you put in front of them.
That is for sure. All right, we'll do it all again next week. Remember, always check us out on our Facebook page, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Make sure to put the Outdoors in there. You'll go to that Facebook page, leave us some pictures, some comments out there, and we'll talk about it next week. See you.
Sound good.